puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear that music, I just think to myself, abandoned Manitoba. And I have with me this morning Gordon Goldsborough, head researcher from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadja.
So what, remind us of the clue that you gave us last week.
Yes, well, I said that we were going to consider a spot out near Gilbert Plains, Manitoba, which is west of Dauphin, that illustrates how people used to get a supply of fresh meat in the days before refrigeration.
Okay, so I've been stewing on this, get what I did there? I'm so smart. Yeah. Tell us more.
Well, we're going to see a building that was used by something called a beef ring.
Okay, so that sounds like an underground gang. The beef ring. No?
Like, well,
maybe that's just
maybe
me.
Not underground, but it certainly was a gang.
Yes, tell me.
Well, if we think about where meat comes from, you know, I ask kids nowadays and they often say, well, it comes from a store. You know, because that's really the only point of reference they have. Very few of us now have any connection with the actual meat supply. So it's worth remembering that, of course, at one time, where people would get their meat was a real dilemma, especially if you lived in rural Manitoba. Mm-hmm. You know, here in Winnipeg, if you had access to the local butcher shop, there was enough people in the city that, of course, you know, any animal that was used, that was carved up into pieces, you know, there's enough people to distribute it to that, you know, you never really had to worry. And of course, the fact that we have a cold winter here in Manitoba means that you have natural refrigeration in the wintertime. Where your problem arises is in the summer.
Yes.
So that was the dilemma faced by people in rural Manitoba, that if you don't have a huge population, how do you get a supply of fresh meat that is safe during the summer when there's no refrigeration? Because, of course, keep in mind, you know, our modern refrigerators don't go back very, very far. Back in the day, people would have perhaps like an ice chest in their home. Mm-hmm. They would have blocks of ice that had been kept from the winter, but they wouldn't keep things frozen. They would just keep things cool. So how do you keep meat fresh?
Right.
You know, so that what arose then was this system called the beef ring. Well, a beef ring was a formal organization. You know, it had officers, it had a president, it had a secretary, it had a treasurer. You know, it had to be formal in order for the whole thing to work out fairly. It had rules, it had a constitution, and they had members. You could be a member of a beef ring. And the average beef ring would range in membership from about 15 families to maybe as many as 25 or maybe even 30.
Okay.
But the average was around 20. And the idea was that everyone in the ring, they would each, for 1 week, would contribute an animal from their herd, you know, some kind of cattle. And so the idea would be at the beginning of the summer, so late April, beginning of May, everyone from the members of the ring would get together and they'd pull a number from a hat.
Mm-hmm.
And that would determine the order that you were in the beef ring. Then when your number came up, you would bring one of the animals from your herd to a spot. Now, and this is where we come into our abandoned spot, because near Gilbert Plains is the last, as far as we know, the last surviving slaughterhouse for one of these beef rings.
Okay.
So you would bring your animal to the slaughterhouse, usually on a Thursday, apparently, and the animal would then be killed. Would be cleaned and the carcass would be cleaned up and then cut into portions. The members of the beef ring would bring a cloth sack. Usually they used a flour sack, because in those days, flour came in nice high-quality cotton bags that you would clean, and you'd bring it to the slaughterhouse. Then the person that was designated to cut the animal up would cut it into portions and would put your portion into your bag. There'd be a whole bunch of hooks hanging inside the beef ring building, and they'd put your cuts of meat into your bag. Incidentally, the meat they would get, they had a very formal system too. Everyone got one steak, one roast, and what they called a boiling piece, which basically meant it wasn't a very good cut of meat and you had to boil it to make it edible. And then come Friday morning, you could then come pick up your bag, go home, and you'd be ready for that either that Friday night family dinner or Saturday night. You'd have a nice fresh piece of meat that you could have. And so each family, so if there were, say, 20 families in this beef ring, each of them contributing one animal each week, you would have, therefore, meat for 20 weeks or about 5 months. So from the beginning of May or middle of May through to, you know, probably into October. And then once you're into October, you're getting back into the cool season again. And so you could be on your own. You could have your own meat sort of setup. So that's basically the system that would work. And it worked very well. Every family that participated would contribute to the ring, and then would get back every week, would get some portion. So the premise is that by the end of the ring, you would have got the same amount back as you had contributed. Now, it didn't always work out that way. And so every week when they would give you your portion, they had weighed it. So you knew precisely how much you had received. They had also, of course, weighed the entire carcass of the animal you had contributed. So at the end of the year, at the end of the – in the fall, they would have sort of a final accounting, where they would add up the weight of your animal that you had brought. They would add up all the different portions you had received over the summer, and if you had received more than you had contributed, well, then you'd owe some money. You'd have to pay so much per pound of excess. On the other hand, if you had received less than the animal you had brought, then you would be compensated from those who had paid. So it was a very fair system.
Yeah, very egalitarian.
Absolutely. And, of course, it depended on local cooperation. In fact, I think one of the real virtues of this system is that not only did it make sure everyone got a supply of meat, everybody depended on everyone else. And it seems to me, you know, that was a really good system to promote sort of social cohesion in rural Manitoba. Mm. You know, you were quite literally dependent on your neighbors for your food supply. And so I think that's what really made rural communities especially very tight-knit,
right?
You know, because they were, you know, dependent on each other for their food. But one of the issues that inevitably arose, and I found reference to this going back as far as 1920, there were concerns about the quality of the meat. And, you know, in this day and age, of course, in our present day, you know, the meat is all very closely inspected by the government to ensure quality. And so what I think ultimately brought the whole thing to an end, the beef ring phenomenon, was a combination of, I think, the electrification of rural farms that was going on during the 40s and 50s that meant that farms now had freezers, for instance, that they could store their meat in the summer. So they didn't need necessarily to have the beef ring. It was also the fact that a lot of towns nearby would have what they called locker plants, where even if you didn't have electricity on your farm, there was probably electricity in the nearby town, and then you could have a supply of meat frozen for you in the locker in the town. But I think just as probably important was the crackdown, I guess, on the quality of the meat, so that if you couldn't have high quality, then that would maybe spell the end of the beef ring.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting about this little slaughterhouse, I think, near Gilbert Plains, is that it's a very important reminder of the day when, you know, we got our meat in a very different way than today. And so someone clearly in the Gilbert Plains area recognized that importance. And so in the mid-2000s, the municipality there designated this little beef ring building as a municipal heritage site. Mm. And then a group of community members from 2007, 2008 restored it. And so it's sitting there. You can go and have a look at it. You can peer in the windows, see the row of hooks, you know, they would have hung the bags of meat on. And it's a very interesting reminder of, you know, a system that wasn't very long ago, the way that many people in rural Manitoba got their meat supply.
And I don't know why, Gordon, but all of a sudden I'm craving beef sausages. So thanks for that. But thank you for coming in and talking about this today.
You're welcome.
You have a talent for bringing the mundane into the interesting. So I appreciate that.
Good.
And the maybe clue can, for next week. Yes,
that's right.
Please.
I can give you a clue. Well, we're going to stay on the food theme, but instead of meat, we'll consider something sweet. And it definitely can't be beat.
Gordon Goldsborough, you're a poet as well as a historian. Thank you so much for joining us today.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.